Truth is on air. City Talk 105.9.
This is City Talk 105.9.
This is not a drill. I repeat, this is not a drill.
Do not be afraid. We are now in control of what you hear.
One, two, three, testing.
A journey to the far reaches of knowledge and the unknown.
I can't believe I just saw that.
From aliens to angels, conspiracies to cover-ups.
One soul and preeminent power.
From extraterrestrials to exposing the truth.
I'll try to explain as much as I can.
You're listening to Planet X. Planet X, exclusive to City Talk 105.9.
Good evening, I'm Neil Atkinson, and this is the UK's biggest paranormal show on radio. It is Planet X on City Talk 105.9. It's another trip to Destination Weird. Between 8 and 10, the truth is on air. And tonight, we revisit the alien subject. In particular, we're talking alien abductees. Now, Simon Parks first came to our attention when the Metro newspaper ran the story with the typical tabloid headline, "My Mum Was a 9-Foot Green Alien." Kind of right up there with Freddie Starr ate my hamster, isn't it? But anyway, Simon is a town councillor and claims that his mother was an alien and has an extraordinary detailed and complex contact with extra and interdimensional beings over his life. And with a story like that, we just had to get him on. That's Simon Parks on the show very soon. We'll also chat after nine to Miles Johnson from the MASH project. I'll be testing our planet experts to see if they know what a MASH stands for. He's also a documentary maker who's done some great documentaries, including one on Simon Parks, so we'll talk to him about his views on Simon as well. And he's one of the guest speakers at the ET conference at the end of June. But first, let's meet our planet experts. The boys are back in town. It is Dan the Man and also Steve Merritt, the editor of Phenomena magazine and parapsychologist. Welcome back, boys.
Good evening.
Hi, Neil.
Welcome in. Let's just test you on the AMASH thing. Do we know what AMASH stands for?
I haven't the foggiest, actually.
AMASH.
This is a problem with all these acronyms now. So.
They're everywhere, aren't
they? They're everywhere.
AMASH is actually Anomalous Mind Management Abductee Contactee Helpline.
Oh, blimey.
So there you go. Now you know. So we'll be talking to Miles about that a little later on. But let's just go, before we get Simon on the phone, let's go back, cast our minds back. It's one of the very first shows, and it was Dan, the man, who brought the story to our attention with that cracking headline, "My Mum is a 9-Foot Green Alien." It's great, isn't it?
That's right. Simon came to our attention through the Metro magazine, and it was only through the Metro magazine that we kind of got to know him. It's kind of the reason why we wanted to get him on the show, because it came into the public domain. The very fact that he's a British politician or a town councillor and is quite willing to come out with this kind of story is quite kind of interesting in itself. Obviously, whether or not his claims stand up, I mean, it's just going to be quite fascinating to see what he's got to say about it.
I've got some little bits from the actual article that the Metro ran. The mother was a 9-foot green alien. He was assisted from time to time by an 8-foot doctor type alien dressed as a waiter who used to help him out. What else have we got down here? He goes on to say, "For many people who don't experience it, it's very hard to accept. We are taught to only see and believe what we can touch, but it's acceptable to believe in religion," he says. And there was another little piece. I don't know whether I've got it. But no, I've not got it. But he goes on to say in the article that they were more interested in his soul, but not his actual physical body. Mm. So what are your thoughts on this, Steve?
Well, you know, the thing is with alien abduction stories is that, they're all very, very colourful and anything goes, to tell you the truth. Right from, I mean, my first investigation into the alien abduction phenomenon is 1985, I think it was. And, of course, it became very Americanised at that time because a lot of people were experiencing the little Greys, as we might call them. However, though, you go back into the 70s, you know, when I took over Map-It, it had been running since 1974. And if you go back into the 70s, you start looking at the phenomena then. It was very much, you know, people that looked like us. You know, Nordic type, or, you know, bearded people, or long hair, pale skin, that sort of thing. So you do see the phenomena change throughout, you know, the generations. However, for me, you know, I never put the UFO phenomena and the alien abduction phenomena together, because UFOs definitely exist, because they'll always be unidentified. You know, there'll certainly be misidentifications. And there are things flying around out there, because I've seen them myself, and you know, we just do not know what they are. But to say that they're actually extraterrestrial in origin, well, that requires quite a considerable amount of evidence. And for me, you know, it always has lacked, the subject, alien abduction, some evidence. But taking that, you know, that I do know a number of cases I've investigated over the years where there does seem to be some very, very tangible things which do provide, you know, point towards a conclusion that something very strange has gone on. Even ground analysis and trace analysis. I am a believer in the fact that certain things are taking place. The unfortunate thing is, which is very frustrating, is physical, tangible evidence is very, very difficult to get hold of.
One of the other things, though, about the whole alien abduction phenomena and the way that it's been reported is it has a lot of kind of coincidences with reports of ancient kind of stories about demons and ancient history about people who were getting haunted as well.
Oh, of course.
It kind of, the whole phenomenon almost kind of is like a modern update of a previous phenomenon.
Exactly, yeah. You can see this type of phenomena through all the different generations and cultures throughout the world. I mean, in Ireland, you know, we had small gentry type beings, which basically would, if your baby was ugly, they'd take it away. You know, and replace it. And the thing is that that type of alien type abduction type scenario, of course, it was more referred to the fairy folk, you know, in being responsible for that. In other, like Dan's mentioned, it's been demons, it's been different types of beings from the underworld, all sorts of things. You can see it throughout all different cultures. The main thing is that the characteristics are all very, very similar.
There's also a lot of the abductee type information that comes out from so-called abductees, like sleep paralysis, for instance, that can actually be explained.
Oh, yeah, certainly. Sleep paralysis can certainly be explained. But, however, it's also associated just as much with the paranormal phenomena as it is UFO abductions. It is something that has been looked into by the parapsychological departments over the years, many, many, many times. And yes, we do know that there are temporal seizures and all sorts of different things that can cause this hypnagogic type experiences, where it was just people just falling asleep and people just waking up. Because when we actually are asleep, what we refer to as a rapid eye movement, we spend 8 hours in bed at night just trying to get that 20 minutes, should we say. We're completely physically cannot move and cannot hear at that time. It's known as input and output blockade. However, when we're just waking up or when we're just going to sleep, sometimes people can have those lucid dreams, those hypnagogic type experiences, and they can feel a presence. Sometimes they can witness things, hallucinate. All sorts of things can come into it. So, yes, we can rationalise a lot of those experiences, but it doesn't mean, though, that they're not attributed to UFO phenomena or the paranormal phenomena. It just means that something else could tap into those resources and switch the switch, which causes those experiences to people to report.
Of course, then, you know, that's quite interesting in terms of sleep paralysis and the whole idea of UFO abductions being during the night, during sleep. But there's a lot of UFO abductees that have conscious recall.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Obviously, sleep paralysis doesn't deter from that. But there's also another interesting theory I thought interesting to see what Steve thinks about it. Dr. Rich Strassman felt that a lot of UFO incidents and UFO abductee was like due to a release of kind of natural DMT in the brain, causing hallucinogenic, causing kind of visions and stuff like that.
That's right, yeah. I mean, I know, I'm aware of his work. And it's very similar to the natural enzymes which are released during grief hallucinations, when people are grieving so badly through losing a lost one, that sometimes they can induce what is referred to as a grief-induced hallucination. And they see the images of their fathers or mothers or something, and what happens is, because the body's so stressed, the brain takes over and says, I need to calm you down. At this rate, you know, you're going to explode. And what the brain does, it takes over you not knowingly, and produces this hallucination to calm you down. And people, after they have an experience, sort of say, oh, yeah, you know, I'm a bit calmer now. I know she's okay and this, that and the other. These things do happen. The brain is an amazing thing, and it can overrun, it can overtake. Just simply the fact is, you know, inducing those same hormones and enzymes to cause those hallucinations. That's this particular doctor's working on the same principles. But, however, it doesn't rule out the fact that more than one person has witnessed these events at the same time. I was lucky enough on two separate occasions to interview Travis Walton, who was a gentleman who was allegedly abducted for 5 days whilst he was out with his associates, loggers. They used to be cutting trees down in the Arizona forest.
That's right, it's one of the most famous abduction cases in UFO history.
It is, exactly. And I've also discussed with Whitley Strieber. Now, he's associated to the film Communion, yeah? And I've met Whitley a few times, and his experience has come from childhood as well. And they're very, 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 very interesting, some of the things that they talk about. However, as far as I'm aware, you know, there's plenty of evidence to suggest that something definitely strange has gone on regarding Travis Walton. And they still haven't concluded, even today. You know, a rational explanation for where he went for those 5 days, and why would they all concoct a story? They did all pass lie detector tests, remember?
It is a fascinating subject. Simon Parks is our first guest on the show. Talking to him on the phone, he seems a very genuine guy, a very grounded guy, very down to earth, with a very bizarre story. So we will get his take on it, see what he has to say. And as I always say on this show, keep an open mind, but not so open that your brain falls out. Okay, we don't mind skeptics, but not closed-minded skeptics. It's always nice to look at all the evidence,
be open-minded,
all the research,
be objective.
Absolutely. So that's all coming up very, very soon. So stay right here on Planet X.
You're listening to Planet X. Planet X, the biggest paranormal show on radio. City Talk 105.9.
Okay, just before we get to Simon, let's have a little bit of a catch-up and find out what's going on in the wonderful, weird world of Phenomena magazine. Anything strange in the office this week?
Well, of course, like I mentioned last week, I brought the newspaper in, actually, to show you regarding the hit that we had from our guest, Mr. Steve Johnson, the man at Dreams the Future. And a few weeks back, when he was back on the show, he did mention, you asked him if there was anything current going on, and he did mention this football-type theme. He mentioned Poland, he mentioned the word Nazi and something like that. And I thought it was a very odd thing for him to say, because never do you normally sort of get that sort of three things that come to light in one situation. And I knew also that England weren't really down to be playing Poland, but nevertheless, in the Sun newspaper on May the...
Which I can't actually look at, being an official scouser, so you'll have to take that away from me.
I know. On May...
It when you get outside.
On May the 8th, in the Sun newspaper, on page 3 and 4, there's a big article there. It says, death sentence, D-E-A-F, death sentence. And it's regarding England's fans face sonic cannon blasts. It mentions about England. It mentions the problems regarding Poland, Polish fans. And it also mentions there, down on the second column, regarding people who have been on Facebook and other places on the internet, mentioning like it's like 1939 when the Nazis marched in to Poland. And I just thought it was remarkable. Like, it just seems to be yet another hit. So we've documented that. Also, what's in the press recently this week is a woman from Essex who claims that she has had so many paranormal experiences in her £147,000 cottage, two-bedroom cottage, there, that she's can't stay there no more. She's just had a child. She'd lived there for 3 years. She said that she's been touched and prodded and pulled. Things have been moved around, strange noises. And things escalated after having the birth of her son. She saw an apparition standing over her cot. Now she's a single parent, and now she actually claims that she has to open her house to allow guys to come in and use it to investigate and stuff at a charge, so she can make ends meet, you could say. I've always been very dubious about these sort of things, you know, especially when you see these articles in the red top papers. You know, fair enough if people are having paranormal disturbances, you know, and if she's too scared to stay there, I understand, you know, because people do have those experiences. But nevertheless, it was rather interesting, and it's apparently still going on.
keep us updated. It sounds an interesting story. A couple of things that cropped up on the website. We mentioned it last week, the unidentified floating blob, which was filmed in the deep, and none of us knew what it was. But, of course, Mr. Mira managed to work out, I don't know how you did it, but you managed to get to the bottom of it.
Well, yeah, I talked to a gentleman I know as Dr. Carl Schuker. I believe he's probably one of the country's leading experts in the field of cryptozoological stuff. And after analysing the footage a few times and putting some details down for him, I sent him the relevant information. And he got back to me, and he knew exactly what it was. It's something referred to as the nickname, the bell-type jellyfish. Can you read the name? It's got one of those very unusual names, Neil.
I can't see it, no. I've not got it up on my screen.
Yeah, Dicifera erotica or something like that. You know, they have all these unusual names, don't they? But he knew exactly what it was, and I thought that's fantastic because, you know, we can sort of put a name to something. It isn't even referred to as really much of an X creature. It's pretty much well known about. But nevertheless, those things are found. You know, we knew about the sealer camp, like Dan mentioned a couple of weeks back, that this is an exotic type, prehistoric type fish which was thought to be extinct, and we found it living and breeding, you know. So, you know, there are things out there which are, you could say, are X creatures, but the more things that I get put forward, I ask people to send the footage in, send the photographs in of anything strange and see what we can find.
And if you don't know what we're talking about, check out the website. I'll give you the details in just a moment, but all the pictures are on there, the mysterious blob. Let's give you some numbers if you want to get in touch with the show. It's a very interactive show. And as always, we'd like to hear from you. Of ways that you can get in touch with the show. It's a very interactive show. Of course, there's the Facebook thing. You can do that, or you can tweet us. I'll give you more details on that in just a little while. But probably the easiest way to get in touch is to go via the website. Now, the website is planetxlive.co.uk. There's the phone number on there. There's the text number there. And there's also the links to Facebook and Twitter as well. But let me give you them anyway, just in case you can't get online. You can text us, text talk, then a question. Maybe you've got an interesting question for our first guest coming up in just a second. Simon Parks, who claims to have been abducted by aliens. And his real mum was an alien. Have you got a question about that? Then do get in touch with us. Text talk and then send it off along with your question to 61025. If you'd like to give us a call, then the numbers are 0151 708 1059. All right, so text and call right now. The lines are open, 0151 708 1059. About anything, really, anything to do with paranormal, spiritual, suppressed news, alternative views. But in particular, we'd like questions for our first guest, Simon Parks. Anything to do with aliens, the alien agenda, being abducted, or maybe you've seen craft, maybe you've seen UFOs yourself, then get in touch. Let's have your questions right now. Text talk, then your question, 61025, or give us a call, 0151 708 1059. If you can get online, that's where all the action is. Just go to the website, planetxlive.co.uk. All the links that you need, all the numbers that you need are right there. And if you go on the forum, there's also a chance for you to win tickets to the ET Communication Conference happening at the end of June at the Static, okay? So get online and do that if you can. That's probably the best and easiest way. PlanetXLive.co.uk.
Planet X online, on your mobile, on City Talk 105.9.
Okay, time for our first guest. As we mentioned at the top of the hour, Simon first came to our attention when the Metro News paper ran the story with the typical tabloid headline, "My Mum Was a 9-Foot Green Alien." Now, just to give you a little bit of background, Simon is a town councillor, and he claims that his mother was an alien. He's also had a very extraordinary and detailed and complex contact with various extra and interdimensional beings over his life. And with a story like that, we just had to get him on the show. So we say, welcome to Planet X, Simon Parks.
Hi, it's lovely to speak with you and with all your listeners.
Brilliant to have you on, Simon. Now, the first thing I want to get to, before we even get into the aliens, is the fact that you are a local town councillor. Not an MP. I think a few people have reported you as being an MP, but you're a town councillor. So I'm guessing you're an elected official.
That's right.
How did the rest of the council first react when all this came out?
Incredibly supportively. Our AGM, our town council AGM, was probably about 6 weeks after the main news stories hit. And I thought, well, this will be a really interesting test, because at the AGM you have to try and fight your way for your committees. So you have your best committees that you want to be on, the ones that interest you. And I thought, well, with all this publicity, I'll probably get on three. So I fought for three. Do you know what? I got on nine. So, as somebody said to me, you've not murdered anybody, Simon. You've not attacked anybody. And a number of people have come up to me and said, we know what you're saying is true. We just haven't got the guts to come out and do what you did. I've been totally blown away by the support I've had. It's been absolutely incredible.
And when did it all first... Because we noticed the article about 3 or 4 weeks ago, but I think it was way before then when it all first started coming out, wasn't it?
Well, I agreed to do a number of interviews with an organisation called AMASH. And interestingly enough, you've got one of the guys on AMASH later tonight.
Yeah, we've got Miles on after 9 o'clock, so we're going to have a chat to him about you as well.
Oh, well, that'll be very interesting. Nothing good, I hope. the reason I agreed to do the YouTube videos was the twofold. One, when I decided that I was no longer going to hide from the reality, and I was going to face it, and I was going to embrace it. I found there was no support network at that time in Britain. There was nothing to support you. So I actually went to an organization in America called MUFON. And it was one of the very, very few Europeans to be accepted on the American MUFON support network. I think there's only a handful of us. They don't generally take people from outside the States, but they took me, and I was there for 6 months, and that was very helpful. So I set I agreed to do the interviews so that people could get in touch who had similar experiences and wanted to know that they were not going mad. And secondly, I wanted the truth to get out there. I want people to know that what they hear from their government, what they read in the papers, you know, the establishment press, and what they're taught in school isn't necessarily the truth.
Now, Simon, we're going to touch on some very, I would say, sensitive subjects during the course of the interview.
Yeah.
And I've mentioned to you before, when we had a bit of a chat before we came on air, that we were doing an interview with Gary Heseltine, who's the UFO researcher and police detective. And for the first time in his interview career, the line actually got cut off when we were talking about some sensitive stuff, including Black Ops. And just tell us about what happened when you were doing an interview with a French radio station.
This was on Friday. Again, this is organised by AMASH, sort of brokering it. They put us in touch with a French radio station. Really nice guys. They were called ODH TV. And it was a really long, I mean, we did 4.5 hours non-stop our interview. But during the interview, the station had a complete power cut, and they were completely put out of action, and they had to get the generators going. This is not uncommon. You often get helicopters that fly over you. Often when I'm doing a Skype with a contactee or an experiencer, it will just be pulled. It's so much so now that when I'm on the phone or when I'm doing something, I actually just make a joke of the NSA, the National Security Agency in America. I'll just say, come on, boys, you've done this twice now, this conversation, just leave us alone. And oddly enough, we don't get trouble after that. So I think what the security services do, because they monitor very, very closely anything or anybody that interests them, they just let you know they're there, and they're just showing you that they can pull the plug and they have influence over your life.
Hi, guys, if you're listening.
Yeah,
hope you're enjoying the show.
That's exactly right. So I hope your generator's topped up.
Yeah, we've got plenty of diesel, I think we'll be okay.
Okay,
well, listen, before we take our first break, let's go right back to the start then. This all started, apparently, the first sort of recollection you have was when you were age 3. Take us back to that time.
The first recollection I have would be when I was about 3 months old.
Wow.
The three-year-old one was when I think what we'd call the serious interaction began. Which one are you interested in?
Well, let's go right back. I mean, I have trouble remembering stuff that happened last week. I mean, how do you remember all this?
Because I think it was so startling. It was so totally different from anything I'd experienced. And when you are taken out of your comfort zone, no matter how old or how young you are, something that is so shocking, and I don't mean that in a bad way, something that's so different, it does stick with you. I remember very, very clearly being in my cot. Because I'm so young, I can't actually move my head very much. And then two hands come down. They're four fingers. There's no five fingers. There's no thumb. And they're green. They're actually green. Green hands and green thin arms. They reach down, take me around the middle, lift me up. They're not hurting me, but it's very firm. And because I'm so little, my head falls backwards. I can't move. I'm just lifted right out of the cot. And all I can see is the ceiling. I can remember that because I can't move my head. And then I'm tipped forward, and I can remember my head dropping forward and my chin hitting my breastbone. And then I'm looking straight into the face of what a researcher in Britain calls a mantid. In America, they're referred to as mantis. And making eye contact with it. And that was the very, very first physical on this planet interaction that I can remember.
And then, you know, what happened after this? I mean, take us through to the period where you were aware that this was actually your mother.
That's fantastic tabloid journalism. the being introduced itself to me as, I am your mother. Now, clearly, if it had given birth to me, I would be 9 foot tall, wouldn't I? And I would be green. If you have a look, if you Google, I haven't gotten the paperwork in front of me, but I did actually have a little search, and there was one guy who did correlate a lot of children's reports from children in America who said they'd met the praying mantis being, and time and time again, what they told the researcher was that this creature had introduced itself either as its grandmother or its mother or its auntie. And I think what they do is they know that human males look up particularly to the mother. And so they'll come in very, very early age, and they won't say, I'm a bloody great big alien, because that won't work. They'll say, I'm your mother. And 9 times out of 10, it doesn't work. Lots of these reports that the children were saying, you know, well, no, you're just a great big bug. But I think they came to me so early in my life, that I couldn't tell. All I knew is that normally mummy picks me up with 5 fingers and her skin is pink. And this being had 4 fingers and it was green. But because it never hurt me, because it didn't show any signs of antagonism towards me, I accepted it.
There was a story that I was watching a little bit of the YouTube clip, and you were telling the story about when you were left alone and you were visited by what you described as like their version of a doctor.
Yes, the mantids are divided into 3 groups. The lowest, the mantids come from what they've told me, what we would refer as the fourth dimension. The lowest group in terms of rank are the doctors. And they really are fantastic physicians. If you ever get sick, that's what you want. You don't want one of these little grey buggers. The next one on the rank are the pilots or the computer operators, and these mantids just operate the craft or the computers. The third rank, the most important rank, wears a purple robe with a hood, and they refer to themselves as the masters. And these purple guys with the purple hoods and robes, they coordinate the other 2 ranks of mantids.
Simon, stay right there. We've got quite a few questions coming in already,
okay,
so we will
problem.
Get to those in just a little while. Dan, if you want to get in touch with Facebook, then what's the best thing to do?
If you want to get onto the Facebook group, it's Planet X City Talk 105.9. Sign up for that group there. Of course, you can use Twitter, which is Planet X 105, hashtag or at whatever the Twitter thing is. And, of course, you can get in touch with us on the forum, which is at planetxlive.co.uk. And there's a link there saying questions for the show. So if you sign up for the forum, you can get access to that and ask the questions to the guests.
I'm just going to ask Simon while he's still there. I think you're going to email us some pictures as well that you've done.
I could do.
If but you can.
You will not be surprised to know that my PC has gone down. I've had to phone BT. Unfortunately, Sunday, they're not around until tomorrow, and they'll
we'll do it in the week. We'll get it on in the week.
Yeah, but some fascinating photographs. This is not uncommon. So my computer's down. I can't email them to you till tomorrow.
Okay. Well, we'll definitely get those on the website. Thank you for that for now, Simon. We'll talk more in just a moment. If you want a text, by the way, if you've got a question for Simon about his incredible story, then start your text with the word talk, and then send it off to 61025 with a question, and don't forget to put your name on as well, or just give us a call at 151-708-1059. Back with more next on Planet X.
Planet X. The truth is on air. City Talk 105.9.
Welcome back to Planet X. We're talking to our special guest, Simon Park. Simon, welcome back to Planet X. Quite a few interesting story questions coming through. Dan's got one that he wants to put to you as well.
Okay.
Yeah, just interested to understand, in terms of your recollections of these events, is this something that you've always been aware of throughout your life, or is it something that kind of revealed itself to you at some point in your, you know, do you know, understand what I'm saying?
Yes. Some of the memories that I've had from the moment they happened, and the only way I sort of coped as I grew up was either rationalise them away, or I just completely buried them and refused to think about them. When I hit 50, I'm 52 now, I got over the period of about, I'd say, 9 months to just under a year, a whole flood of memories. Some of these memories were clearly linked to what I'd always remembered. And I thought, as a child and as I was growing up, that I'd remembered every interaction. It soon became apparent that I was only ever remembering just a small portion of what happened, because I would have a memory come back to me, and I'd think, oh, my God, that was back when I was 10 years old or 12 years old. And I still don't think I get all of it, but I have... If you think of a storyboard when you write a cartoon, that's how I get my memories back, because they don't come back as dreams. They come back in the day. Something triggers it. And I just quickly, with a pencil, I always keep a pencil and crayons with me, and I quickly just draw down what I can remember and the conversation. So I've always had a lot of memories, but the last sort of 2 to 3 years, a lot more have come back to me.
I've got another question on the text. This is from Alan in Liverpool. He wants to know that we've been talking about the experiences as a child. Is it still ongoing?
Yes, it is. I get at the peak, which would have been probably maybe 2 years ago, I was getting maybe 6 visits a month. At the moment, I can remember about 2 a month. But that's what I can remember. So I'm not sure how many others go that I just don't pick up.
Keep your texts and your calls and your questions coming in for our special guest in this hour, Simon Parks. 01517081059, or if you want to text in, text talk, then your question to 61025. Steve Mirror is also here, the editor of Phenomena magazine. Steve, you've got a question, haven't you?
Yeah, well, certainly. I mean, I am aware of all what Simon's been talking about, and it does beg a belief, obviously. But, you know, I've heard a lot of similar stories over the years, and I wanted to ask Simon the same question that I put to all these people who I've met throughout 30 years of investigating, is that over a lifetime of experiences, Simon, have you ever come across anything such as you might refer to as evidence towards your claims?
Yes, I often get asked this by researchers, especially debunkers. A debunker once said to me, well, why don't you steal a ray gun?
A ray gun. Right.
So first of all, what I would say is it would be, from my perspective, the most terrible betrayal of trust to do anything like that. I'm not an abductee. Let me make it clear. They don't take me kicking and screaming. I made a soul agreement in 1971 when I was about 11 and a half years old with them. So they only do things that I've agreed to. although, to be honest with you, with these guys, you give them an inch and they take a mile. Yeah, their interpretation on that. So, first of all, no, it wouldn't, because that would be the most disgraceful way to treat the kindness that they've shown me. Mm. Secondly, they just don't leave stuff about.
Right.
What I have got, they put an implant into my left hand, and then I was abducted by humans, and that implant was taken out. So do have a scar on the left hand.
Yeah.
But I no, this is the difficulty with people who claim to have experiences. Unfortunately, there's no hard evidence.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a shame that, you know, obviously people asking for evidence aren't always debunkers, but the fact is, you cannot, obviously you must understand how frustrating it is for people.
Yes.
You know, which might be on the inkling that, yes, something is actually maybe going on, but the fact is, when it comes to trying to obtain tangible evidence,
yes,
we just don't seem to find it. And that's always been the frustrating part of the alien abduction.
I will just say to you that I did actually ask once, why don't you show yourselves? And the answer I got was very interesting. The answer I got from them was, how would that help us?
True, yeah.
That, what they said was, they get everything they want now. If they showed themselves at this point, it would make it much harder to go about doing what they want to do.
Which obviously beggars the question, what are they here for? What is the agenda? Is there an agenda?
Oh, I'm sure there is.
You seem to have spoken quite positively about your experiences in terms of you felt that there was a lot of kindness and a lot of positive energy shown by these beings to you, which is in contrast to a lot of, as you mentioned, kind of traditional alien abduction stories where people are being kind of dragged out of their beds in the middle of the night. Does that kind of give you any kind of idea about what the agenda might be in terms of, do you feel this is a benevolent thing that is happening to you?
I would make it very clear that in the abduction contactee, I prefer the word experiencer, actually, world. No one experiencer is better than another. No one has better experiences than somebody else. We're all equal, or we should all be equal. What tends to happen is it's the agenda they have. If you are a person who once a year is taken from your bed, otherwise anything has no value. So in order to have that free will, you have to be interacted with.
I've got a question from George, who's put in his text, age 10. So welcome, George, to Planet X. He asks, again, a great question. Can you ask them questions? And do you? Because, I mean, if I was, you know, having the same experience as you, I'd probably want to know the meaning of life and all kinds of things. Do you ever find yourself having those sort of conversations with them?
Yes, I mean, only relatively recently, when I became self-aware. What people have to understand is that when an ET interacts with an individual, they will go to that individual's brain and they will, how's the best word, dumb it down. They'll dull it, because if a human goes berserk, which 9 times out of 10 they do when faced with an extraterrestrial, they'll flay their arms around and can actually harm an ET. ETs are quite thin, and except for reptiles, they're not particularly strong. If anyone's read any of Whitley Schreiber's books or any of the classic ET stories, people are frozen. And that's because the ET doesn't trust them. They're not trusted. They feel that if they loosen that mind control, that human will become unworkable. But because they've worked with me from, God knows, from weeks probably, just very young baby, they know me extremely well, and they just put enough mind control on me for the initial part of it so that I'm not freaking out. So it's literally about the amount of control they put on your mind, and as they reduce that, so you can then start to ask them questions because you become self-aware.
I'm quite interested as well about the, you mentioned there, the reptilian types.
Yes.
Is there a sort of hierarchy? Are they subservient to the reptiles? Are they the big kind of bosses, if you like? Or how does that work out?
That's a question I often get asked, and it's a very human question. That isn't meant as a criticism at all. The reptilians, like the mantids, come from the fourth dimension, and because they have interacted with humans for many, many thousands of years, it's not surprising that we are very much into hierarchy, ritual, and ceremony. No, the mantids are an extremely ancient race, very, very versed in law, and they're seen as arbiters. Judges. Other ET races actually look to the mantids to come in and defuse difficult situations. The purple robe is a sign of office. That's the best way to describe it. The reptilians I see are the Draconis. They're the warrior types. They have a dark green or black skin. The range in height from, God knows, so hard to judge, maybe from 7 foot upwards. They probably have the strength between 5 and 7 humans. They're incredibly psychic in their minds, and they will know what a human is thinking before that human thinks it. The rank above them, they do have, well, I suppose, what you call them, officers. But the royalty, these are the white reptiles. They have small vestigial wings. They have pink eyes, and they have white skin. And they're the royalty, and they're the ones who are in charge.
If you'd like to get a question to Simon, because we've only got around about 15 minutes left, and already there's a lot of text coming through, so let me just give you a quick reminder of the numbers that you need. Text, talk, then your question to 6 10 25, or if you'd want to get on the phone, 708 1059, or the Facebook as well. You need to join, but Dan is standing by to accept you. It's if you go on Facebook, it's Planet X, and then just put City Talk 105.9. Dan, I think you've got something that has come through.
Yeah, question on the Facebook from Melissa is, does Simon think that ETs are working closely with world leaders, like some conspiracy theorists say?
I think they're certainly working with governments. I don't believe they're working with leaders.
Quite interesting, that. One thing that you mentioned earlier, before, when Steve was asking you about some of the evidence, some of the possible things you could kind of use to prove this, you mentioned that you had an implant.
Yes.
And that was taken out by an abduction by humans.
Yes.
Can you maybe explain that a little bit more in detail?
I think I was about 5 years old. The Mantid doctors came. At this time, I was living in down south in a place called Hove, which is near Brighton in Sussex. And my mother was a single parent, and people will find this really hard to understand, but I was probably just about 4.5 years old, and my mother said to me, "I'm going to work, don't worry, they'll look after you." And she went out, and I was just left with a glass of water. And sure enough, something did happen, and to cut a long story short, two mantids appeared and asked me, did they have permission to place an implant? They didn't call it an implant. They just showed me this thing, "Can we put this in your hand?" And it actually looked like a marble. And I sort of got really scared and I cried, because I thought, that's a huge, bloody, great big thing. I don't want that hand. And the mantid said, no, and it's what's inside. And this marble just strangely opened. And inside was probably something about half the size of a grain of rice, which is black. And he said, "You know, we want to put it in your hand." And I said, the ET that always comes and collects me, I refer to as Mum. And I said, "Does Mum want me to have this?" And the mantid replied, "Yes," and explained why Mum wanted me to have it. What he said was, "If you want Mum to know where you are at all times, and if you ever get ill, Mum will know and will come and help you. If you think that's a good thing, you can have this. If you think it's a bad thing, you should not have it. You see, it's free will all the time. They don't force me. It's always offered." And I said, "Oh, well, I want Mum to know where I am all the time." So I had it. Several years later, I had a what I think researchers call a MyLab experience. It was taken out, and then I was recontacted by the mantids, and they said, "Can we put another one in? But this time, is it all right if we completely close your mind down? Because what will happen is you will be taken again by your government. But if you don't know where the implant is, they can't find it." So that's what we agreed.
I've got a few more questions on the text. This is from Chris. He wants to know, what do they think of the kind of mess that we're making of this planet? Are they sort of helping behind the scenes to try and put things right when we're always trying to do the worst to the planet? Or do they kind of just let us, you know, do our own thing?
I think they're hugely frustrated. First of all, let me just explain that most of the ETs that I associate with or interact with are working as a group. They are all separate groups, but they are all working to the same agenda. And some technology has been given freely as a present, purely to clean up the earth, and the governments have not used it for that. So they're hugely frustrated that they've given technology to certain governments for the benefit of the earth, and that's not been used. So they're running out of patience, to be perfectly honest with you.
Leads me on to another question from Ian in Neston. Again, Ian, thanks for joining us, Planet X. He says, please could you ask Simon how far advanced in front of us the aliens are, and would they ever help us advance rather than just using us?
They have helped us. In 1947, there were two spacecraft that crashed at Roswell, not one. If anybody tells you one, it's rubbish. They don't know what they're talking about. Two spacecraft collided. There were three debris fields. One was a pod, which contained the living quarters for the extraterrestrials. The other one was almost a complete craft that was collected. And the third was just a debris field where the debris had fallen from the explosion. This was technology given. Now, the rules are that you cannot go to an inferior civilization. When I say inferior, I don't mean spiritually. I mean technologically. You can't go and give a present. It's not allowed. So what they did, this is the reptiles working through the greys, caused a crash. They knew that certain materials would actually fall near American bases where enough would be retrieved to kickstart technology. In 1947, we had the valve, what the Yanks call the vacuum tube. Within a year from Roswell, we had the transistor. This is how our technology has jumped on. He's asked a question. I'll tell you now, first of all, the Earth governments are 25 years technologically ahead of what you or I can buy commercially in the shops. The ETs, in the fourth dimension, you're probably talking between 2,000 years ahead of us and 25,000 years ahead of us. But we are, as well, the military on Earth are catching up very, very quickly through a combination of retrieved, crashed craft, through gifts, and through renegade ETs that will come down and pass stuff off.
We're running out of time, so I want to try and squeeze
it in. It's so difficult in an hour. Normally I do 2 or 3 hours, so it's really difficult in an hour.
I think we're going to definitely have to try and get you back on because the reaction has been great on the text. A couple of things I want to mention, because you wanted to get in a little bit about the whole MI5 situation.
Yes, my mother worked for MI5. Not willingly. She was tricked into it, basically. She was a single parent, and they offered her two wages. They said, you know, you're a single mum, you're bringing up a child, would you like two wages? Didn't even tell her what she was signing. Once she'd signed it, and then they told her what it was. And I remember to this day them saying to her, you know, if you ever tell anybody about this or the work you do for us, you will be found on a railway line, and then who will bring up your son? And very, very briefly, because we're really running out of time here, what would happen is her handler, who was a translator, would arrive with documents that were written in German. And these had come from what was then West Germany, handled by MI5. And this was where the Americans, and it's always the Americans generally, had retrieved crashed UFOs. The technology had been whipped out of them. They were then sent off to different groups. People will know Operation Paperclip, where Nazi scientists were given safe passage from America to, from Germany to America. And the Russians had their own program. The Britons didn't. But what the Britons did, and people didn't realize this, is MI5 basically ran West Germany from the espionage side of it. And Mum would have these documents. They'd all be in German. Her handler, who was a translator, would translate these documents by tape, or ferrous tape, and then she would type, because she was an absolutely fantastic typist. This is before computers were in the civil side. And she would type out these documents. She worked from home. Every lunchtime, she would just leave the paper on her desk. She would go to the kitchen to have her lunch. And on Saturday and Sunday, I used to go and read what she'd written. And she worked for MI5 from 1971 until 1979. This is quite a sad time for me, actually, because she became an alcoholic because she could not cope with what she was reading, and she couldn't tell anybody about it. And she went to her handler and said, you know, I can't sleep, I can't think, I haven't got any friends left, I've become addicted to alcohol, I want to leave MI5. So they said, yes, we'll do that. And she was allowed to leave. She went back to her old job because they kept the job open for her. 2 weeks later, she was dead. And I was 18 when she died. So, you know, you never leave the Secret Service.
Was it all sort of intertwined, the fact that she was working for the government Secret Service and the fact that they were visiting you?
Well, now I...
You've seen the bigger picture now.
Maturity, yes, of course. But when you're young, I mean, it was just an exciting life. I mean, you don't accept things when you're a child. Now, when I look back on it, I think, my God, why wasn't I ever told to leave the room? Why did these guys come and sit around my mother talking about UFOs and the equipment that was being used, what they were finding? And every time I looked up, then they would just look down and smile at me because I was a boy. Those days, boys were boys. We weren't men. So I had soldiers I played with and little dinky motor cars and the Scalectrics and stuff like that. So I'd be down on the floor playing with my toys at 8, 9, 10 years old or whatever, and they would just be holding a conversation. And now I look back on it and I think, well, that's really strange, isn't it?
Again, we're close to running out of time, but there is a couple of questions I wanted to squeeze in. One of the things that you mentioned in some of your interviews is that they were more interested in your soul,
yes,
than your actual physical body.
Is that going to
take too long, is it?
Well, to get it down properly, yes. If I try and answer this now, it's not going to be good.
Oh.
You're going to have to get me back if you want to hear that.
I definitely want to hear more about that. And Disclosure as well. Do you think we'll ever see Disclosure in our lifetime?
Within the next 6 years, you will.
In 6 years? Yeah. Because a lot of people talk about 2012 as being the start of an awakening.
It's correct.
But you're saying that...
I'm saying it's the start. People who say it's all going to happen in 2012 are wrong. It's the start of it. Within the next 5 to 6 years, it will happen. But this is the beginning of it.
That is something to end on, isn't it?
Yep.
Simon, absolutely fascinating. We've been inundated with text and calls. I know we've definitely got to revisit this and get you back on the show. But for now, thank you, Simon Parks.
That's fine. Nice to speak with you all. Take care. Bye-bye.
Cheers, Simon. And we'll be talking to one of the first guys to interview Simon. Miles Johnson is on the way, a documentary maker, and he's got some very interesting stuff to talk about. That's all on the way.
This is City Talk.
5.9. This is not a drill. I repeat, this is not a drill.
Do not be afraid. We are now in control of what you hear.
1, 2, 3, testing.
A journey to the far reaches of knowledge and the unknown.
I can't believe I just saw that.
From aliens to angels, conspiracies to cover-ups.
One soul and preeminent power.
From extraterrestrials to exposing the truth.
I'll try to explain as much as I can.
You're listening to Planet X. Planet X, exclusive to City Talk 105.9.
Good evening, I'm Neil Atkinson, and welcome back to the UK's biggest paranormal show on radio. It is Planet X on City Talk 105.9. It's another trip to Destination Weird, and we've got another hour. The truth is on air. Now, we've already talked to Simon Parks, who claims that he's been visited by aliens. Oh, well, he can remember as way back as when he was just 3 months old. Very interesting guy. Very interesting what he had to say. And we've still got some text that we didn't get time to get to. And we were just getting to some interesting stuff. He was going to explain about the fact that they're really here for his soul and maybe our souls as well, and not the actual physical body. But I think we'll definitely have to get him back in. What do you reckon, guys? Or
oh, most definitely.
Get him in live. That'd be nice. Or get him back on the phone. And
I'd love to have him sat next to me. Yeah.
I know. You love all this sort of stuff, don't you?
Yes, yes.
But you want facts.
Well, of course.
Proof.
I mean, well,
you want aliens landing on the roof.
You can understand how frustrating it is, you know, in 30 years. I want this to be. I want it
no,
to
I think
be
we
true.
All do.
I'd love it. It'd be absolutely fantastic because
but
the unfortunate thing, the day it happens, the day I'm out of a job.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You can well imagine. But, you know, that's
our ratings will go through the roof.
Of course. But that's all I've really wanted, Neil. And it's very frustrating that, you know, I always get told the same things that, you know, they can't provide evidence or they don't want to provide evidence. And really, you know, for us researchers, you can imagine the frustration it's involved because you know, there's lots and lots of information worldwide coming from all these different people talking of a similar experience. And all we want is just that one thing, just to say, yes, there it is. There's the
but
evidence.
Steve, you know. What do you say? I mean, you've spoken to a few people on this saying that you can't prove anything. I mean, what the example you give is, when did you last go away? Can you prove it?
Well, this it's true. I mean, to hardline
skeptics...
Have
you got your passport stamped?
Hardline skeptics,
have you got photographs? You can fake photographs.
Yeah. You can have people, witnesses that lie. You know, you can't prove anything. At the end of the day, a hardline skeptic will always win because they'll say, we'll argue the point that we're actually even here now. It could be all a dream. You know, that's how hardline skeptics they are. You can't win against a hardline skeptic, and that is true. But the unfortunate thing is that just because people ask those questions, is there any evidence, doesn't mean that we're actually non-believers.
We're going to be speaking to Miles Johnson very soon. If you don't know Miles' work, he's from the AMASH project, which is Anomalous Mind Management Abductee Contactee Helpline. He's also, as well, you'd almost think that we planned this show. He was one of the first guys to... He does a lot of documentaries. He's one of the first guys to do an interview with Simon Parks, our guest in the previous hour. So we'll have a little bit of a chat to him about that. And he's got some pretty cool stuff that he's just been working on as well. But more with that with Miles in just a moment. I'm just going to mention some of the texts that we did get through. Somebody wanted to know whether Simon's alien mum was related to the royal family. Well, that's come out in the David Icke stuff, hasn't it? Although Jim Royal does look a little bit like he could be from another planet, or is that the wrong royal family? But that's very sort of down the road of what Ike talks about. And you're a big Ike fan, aren't you, Dan?
I don't mind him. I'm quite open to... The crazier it gets, the better I like it sometimes. So I'm very interested and open-minded. I mean, I think it kind of goes back to what one of the questioners said before about the whole idea of this whole extraterrestrial, interdimensional experience that we may or may not be having, being tied into the kind of the other arm of the conspiracy movement, the control of the population, the New World Order, the Illuminati, all that kind of stuff. And Ike's one of the proponents that links the two together, so it's quite an interesting theory. And of course Simon was mentioning all the kind of various types of aliens that there are, the praying mantis type, the little greys. Steve, you mentioned the Nordics before, the ones look like humans, and of course Ike's big one is the reptilian. So it's an endlessly fascinating kind of theoretical kind of mind pool. But again, as Steve mentions, you know, where's the evidence? But you know, that's what we're here to kind of find out.
Well, yeah, I mean, of course, this subject has been going on for a very, very, very long time. Some people even argue the point that alien abduction was going on thousands of years ago. You know, it just wasn't documented and thought of as it is today. But, you know, all we want is just that one tangible bit of evidence. But, hey, you know, if Simon's right, and we're going to have disclosure in the next six years, I'm hopefully going to be around for that. You know, I can't wait, you know.
Let's hope so. Let's hope he's right with his prediction on that particular one. Now, just before I forget, I've got to mention we've got a new award now. The most committed fan, shall we say, to Planet X has got to go to John Bland, who is he in Manchester? But he's what happens? You know the story. He actually gets the whole family out into the car.
Gets them out into the car, sits on the drive, and listens to a 2-hour show with the family in car. And of course, it must be quite funny for the neighbours to sit and watch him. You know,
the whole family set up the path in the car, listening to Planet X. Absolutely,
that's dedication
brilliant
for you.
Absolutely. Some people would say, can he not listen online? But
I've got his PC at the moment.
You've got his PC, so. Well done. I think we should give him a round of applause. Well done, John Bland and his family, the most dedicated listeners of the week, definitely.
We should get people coming in, seeing if they can top that, really, shouldn't we?
Yeah.
Facebook us, text us, let us know if you can beat that for more committed Planet X listenership.
We'll probably get somebody saying that they're listening now in the fourth dimension or in the Virgo system.
On top of the tower.
Get in touch with us. Let me give you some numbers that you may need. All of these numbers and all the information is on planetxlive.co.uk. But if you're sitting in your car with your family and you haven't got access to a PC, then these are the numbers that you need. Text talk to 61025 or just give us a call, 708 1059. Or if you're outside Liverpool, 0151 708 1059.
Planet X online. On your mobile, on City Talk 105.9.
Okay, let's talk to our next guest. And on the line, we should have the man himself, Miles Johnson. Miles, welcome to Planet X.
Well, gosh, I don't want to disappoint you guys, but Planet X and Nibiru is so last century. Don't you know a Planet Y?
Tell us about Planet Y, then, because we're talking about Planet X next week.
one of the masked planets outside the sort of Pluto sphere, which they've been looking at allegedly with all those telescopes down in Antarctica, where the big news is happening these days.
Oh, well, tell us more, because we're going to get on to, obviously, our namesake Planet X is, some people call it, is it Nibiru or
yeah.
Nibiru?
I just want to hasten to add that Planet X, the radio show, is the best thing on the planet, and it's nothing to do with the so-called alien Vailon conspiracy known as Planet X and Nibiru.
Right. Glad we cleared that one up.
Yeah, I mean, we've got to make that absolutely clear. Planet X on the radio is the best thing ever.
Miles, the check's in the post already.
I'll take any denomination, provided it's got several zeros at the end.
do you take PayPal as well?
I'll even take PayPal.
Brilliant. But what is this planet Y? Is this a real phenomenon?
Yeah, there's a few people in the astronomy side of things keeping the cards close to the chest on a planet Y. There's a couple of bodies out there that they're having a wee bit of a look at. John Lear would call them a masked planet. They've got sort of a thing to stop us from being seen, but it's like a lot of stuff in this business. It's not what you see, it's the movements that you don't see, if you see what I mean. It's a bit like when you see a stealth aircraft. You don't see the aircraft, you just see when something moved. And that's how they find a lot of the stealth fighters. Because, in other words, you don't see the radar trace of it going from A to B. You just see something happened at point B, and then something happened at point C. And then you've got to try and extrapolate from that. It's that kind of a way of detecting things.
Gotcha. Now, listen, there's quite a few things that we want to throw at you. You're going to be actually in Liverpool. You're going to be one of the guest speakers at the ET conference at the end of
yeah.
June, which we'll talk about that and what you're going to be talking about. We're going to talk about AMASH, the project. Let me see, did I get this bit right? Anomalous Mind Management Abductee Contactee Helpline.
Yeah, we didn't want to use the words mind control, but we thought that was a little bit too sort of, oh my gosh, and too sinister. But the research on that is really going back into the 1800s now, and it's been well established that there's a very, very in-depth program involving that within society. I mean, it's very simple. All the sort of pop music you're seeing, the kind of game shows, certain very popular television shows, that is mind control in your face. And a lot of people, anybody who's read the book Transformation of America would be aware of how deep that goes into our political system. And it's all very nasty stuff, quite frankly.
Just briefly, we were speaking to Simon Parks before the 9 o'clock news. You were one of the first guys who actually interviewed him with
yeah.
the YouTube interviews. I really enjoyed his talk, and he seems a very genuine, grounded guy. What was your take on him?
Simon is very clever, very astute, and when people say they're reptilian or they're alien or something like that, they're not actually necessarily saying that the physical body that's sitting in front of you is a reptilian as such. It's what's operating that body. And that was made very clear when Alara Blackwell gave me a very important release on the militarization of remote viewing. Because what the United States are now doing, and I gather the British and probably most of the many leading armies, they are using remote viewers safely in a base in their home country. That remote viewer then enters the actual body of the soldier on the ground, because they inject these guys with all sorts of concoctions of nanotechnology, chemicals and all sorts of things. So the soldier on the ground essentially has got a remote viewer operating through his mind and actually telling him in his ear, literally inside, okay, don't go to the left, enemy soldiers to your left, go right, do a turnaround and launch your missiles or your weapons off to that side of the hill, because that's where the enemy's gone. Essentially, you're talking about a 21st century version of a guy up in a balloon with a set of binoculars and a telephone. And the ETs or the extra-dimensionals operate through human beings in the same kind of way. So, for instance, they're not physically here, but what they're doing is they're actually occupying the bodies or minds of certain humans, and that's how they operate.
So, what we were talking just before the break was the idea that the whole UFO phenomenon and the whole idea of there's a kind of government control trying to control the population are kind of linked together. It's kind of sounding like what you're advocating there.
Yes. Well, for instance, we now know that that there were certainly, or we're getting very strong evidence of the crash retrievals in the 1930s, and we probably feel that went up a lot earlier than that. But that is, we're getting indications that the first transgenic stuff in the 20th century were happening in the prison of war camps, the concentration camps of Germany. And that's where the Nazi connection keeps coming up time and time again, with the Peasmore underground facilities with transgenic programmable generated life forms in Berkshire, the Dulcie base in the States, and an awful lot of evidence and smoke and mirrors to try and cover all that sort of stuff up. And it's the kind of smoke and mirrors and cover-up and the sort of suspicious way that certain people behave and the society that we're living in right now, with all the spy cameras everywhere, the kind of data processing of all that information, that's your evidence. If people want evidence of things going on, they've got to look at what's happening in everyday society, because a lot of these secrets are in plain sight.
We're talking to Miles Johnson, and he is going to be one of the guest speakers at the ET conference at the end of June. Also a fantastic documentary maker. I'm going to talk to him about some of the new stuff that he's working on in just a little while. Steve Mayer is also here, editor of Phenomena magazine. Steve, you got a question?
Yes, yes. I was just wondering what Simon mentioned to us earlier about possibly disclosure happening in the next 6 years. Just wondered if what Miles' opinion on that would be.
Well, very, very simple. You're dealing with a set of governments and a set of intelligence agencies which has lied through their teeth for the last 60, 70, 80 or more years.
So no, really, Miles? Well, the governments lie?
Sorry, I didn't want to shock you guys. So we're now expected to suddenly say, oh, we know that they've got secrets, which we know they've got, so we need them to tell us what those secrets are, because we know they've got them, but we need them to tell us because we don't know what they are. Confused?
Yeah.
Simple answer is, we're not going to get disclosure until everyday ordinary citizens wake up, do their own research, and expose that information, so they have to.
Yeah, do you actually believe there's a drip-feeding process, though? Because obviously, I've noted over the last 30 years of research that there does seem to be, you know, the UFO subject is more prominent now. It's also been introduced to the national curriculum into the school system in the UK. It's also been even done trial UFO crash tests at several schools in the UK last year and the year before that.
It's camouflaged through limited disclosure. Just about everything they give us is a distraction. The term extraterrestrial, for instance, is a no-brainer. They're getting you to look up and away in a three-dimensional universe, because extraterrestrial implies a three-dimensional universe with the dimension of time. We live in a multi-dimensional universe with many different forms of convoluted dimension and all sorts of views and how things are looked at. I mean, if we look at the night sky, it is a grossly distorted image that we're looking at. There's not a single star there that's in the same, that is in the right place at the same time. So we're looking at stars and things which are millions and millions of light years different in time and position than other ones. So the very simplest view of what we're looking at is a completely grossly distorted image. So this idea of a simple sort of sphere, and you just keep traveling along in your spaceship and everything's fine with linear time, it just doesn't work like that. So we've got to look inside ourselves. We are the perceivers. We are the anthropic conscious number crunchers which are generating this reality around us, and it's that which has been manipulated, the consciousness of every single human being using various forms of mind control to determine what we believe collectively is the reality around us. And that is a grossly distorted and faulty matrix that we're living in.
Miles, you do a little bit of an interesting talk. We chatted briefly before the show about how matter is different here to different dimensions.
I mean, this is a classic case. Astronomers and physicists tell us the entire universe and billions of universes behave like this, you know, based on instrumentation, which they use a two-dimensional instrument to measure a multidimensional universe. That's called a slight measurement error. What happens is we know everything about the universe, but we know we don't know anything about 95% of it. We call that dark matter because we haven't a clue. So really, we've got to look much closer to home and how we actually action perception. And the analogies are here in nature all around us, the way all different types of life form reacts and interacts with each other, using all forms of communication, subtle chemical communication, direct thought, direct action, or indirect action and thought. You know, birds and bees, literally. There's an awful lot of analogies there that if you look at it very carefully, you'll then be able to see the universe slightly better in a slightly different way. It's not simple three dimensions and linear time.
It's absolutely fascinating. I mean, I've heard of very similar things before, and the concept and construction of life forms as well on this planet. Do you think that obviously that, you know, lots of people over the 30 years have said to me on many occasions that the Earth has been like one big project, like an alien zoo. What do you feel about that, Miles?
Well, this is information. This is interesting about Ava Zemanova, who I've interviewed just in Prague. Mm. Now, she was interviewed by Project Camelot, and Project Camelot did a fantastic job, but on this occasion, he just didn't use a microphone.
I know. Oh. We were trying to get some stuff off for tonight's show, and it's terrible. It's like they recorded it in the toilet.
Now, she's what we call an ancient, and a number of individuals are able to sort of tune into this using their stable version of their DNA, and she's describing arriving here on Earth before there was any animal matter, physical, just vegetable life here. And those 10,000 beings arrived in a semi-spherical craft because it had a problem and needed to repair itself, but it didn't realize that when it got here, it was passing through a double or dual gravitational loop. Now, this is what she's saying, okay? I just to make things clear, I'm saying allegedly, or this person has said, I'm not stating anything as a matter of fact, because that's very difficult to actually prove, but we have to work on what we've got. So in essence, the beings that crashed here a long time ago had to then translate from a different physical reality down to actually survive and exist in the physical matter that we exist in. It's a bit like the reverse bends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you're a diver and you go down too deep, all the oxygen and nitrogen in your blood gets compressed into your blood, and you can survive with that. That's okay. Mm-hmm. But if you come back up too quickly, that explodes as gas. Your blood actually boils. So if you can reverse that analogy and see how beings which matter is sort of different to ours, sort of compressed itself so that if they could physically exist in this reality as living life forms. So it's a little bit like that. I mean, scientifically speaking, it's probably rather more complicated. But if you could sort of imagine how, from a different dimensional reality or a different part of space, which is a lot thinner than our space, and when they came here, they sort of had to work out how to survive in a much denser environment. And for instance, anybody physically knows about physics. When you see light, it's about a photon or an energy band of an electron in an atom, which drops a certain defined step, and that emits a bit of energy, which allows you to see something. If that little band is slightly different, the photon that you're going to see is of a different energy, and your eye doesn't see it. So that's how something can be invisible,
but be
standing right in front of you. Now, I'm using very, very, very simplistic terms to try and describe this. So what happens is certain people are now beginning to sort of see, because we're beginning to see these shifting shadows, shadow people and strange things like that. That just means there's no photons which your eye can perceive as light.
Mm.
And in many respects, we are blinded by the light because we're used to seeing so much information based on this reflected protons and wave particles, as light is described. So if that's a slightly different value, you're not going to see things properly, or you're going to see them shifted in a different color. And so all these sort of things need more fully explored and explained. But we've got to shift out of this narrow little visual band that we...
Well, of course, I mean, we do know that human perceptions are very limited, especially to even with other animals on planet Earth. You know, their perceptions are a lot greater than ours. And we are aware that there's such a massive, huge field of visual view, and we will only see a tiniest little band of that.
Yeah, and I think the Avatar film is quite interesting in how that was a means of demonstrating really what I've been describing and how a paraplegic soldier is able to basically jump in or become part of another complete living being, living in a completely different existence.
Very similar to the remote viewing program, I'm not sure.
Yes. And that's important because we've all been told Stargate, Project Stargate, all the remote viewers, oh, that was all poo-poo, didn't happen. Nick Pope said that would never happen when he wasn't briefed on it.
Yeah.
It was Nick Pope's boss who told me that we're not dealing with extraterrestrials, but we're dealing with extra-dimensionals. And so we really need to expand our view of the whole universe, and it's an exciting, wonderful universe. And it's unfortunate that the good old industrial military complex is trying to get there first, exploit it for profit gain or material gain, and in the meantime, ordinary everyday folks suffer very badly on it. And I think that's the biggest problem with this whole sort of UFO side of things. So that needs addressed. If there's any need, I mean, this is what Gary McKinnon was basically fighting for. He discovered astronauts' core.
Yes.
On off-world planet astronauts' core. And essentially that's what I mean in my basis research. My basis documentaries are very long-form interviews with very little editing, because often that's the only time that individual will have ever been interviewed. And rather than leave a lot of the material on a shelf in my edit suite, we give as much of that information out there, because we're getting sections of a jigsaw puzzle which are too far apart to really form a proper picture. And we're beginning to get, maybe see how that picture's forming, but with more and more research, more and more interviews, more and more things coming forward, like the Super Soldier program.
Oh, yes, yeah.
I mean, what's that really for? And I think anybody who saw the BBC program Madness in the Fast Lane, that was clearly a demonstration of two twins who came from Cork, and Cork is very important here. It's the centre of Cork, and off the coast of Cork is where the secrets of UFOs will be found.
Miles, we've got to take a break. It's fascinating stuff. I want to come back and talk more about that you were just touching on there. Also the Super Soldier story, and also the interview you did with John Erwin a little while back. I want to talk to you about that. So lots to pack in. So Miles, stay right there, and we'll be back with more from Miles Johnson next on Planet X.
From aliens to angels, conspiracies to cover-ups, this is Planet X on City Talk 105.9.
Welcome back to Planet X. Back to Miles Johnson in just a moment. I'm just going to mention a few people. Hi to Jeff and Emma, and also Layla and Cassidy, who are listening in for the first time, and Oliver as well. So welcome to Planet X. And somebody else on the text that says, hi, first time I've tuned in. Great show. I've got a quick question for you. Do you know anywhere local to Skywatch? Is that a ufology
It is
term?
A ufological.
And that's from Lee in Chester.
Oh, right. Okay, Lee. It's a ufological term, Neil, where people go out and monitor the skies. And of course, unfortunately, in this country, the best skies are in the winter, as you can well imagine, But the good thing is, if we're getting, we're due to have some good weather soon, I believe, I hope. Not like last year's summer, which was on a Tuesday. And it's a perfect sky sometimes, so people can get out and basically take the video cameras, photos and things like that, and hopefully look, monitor the sky and see what they see. A good place basically to visit there would probably be Asher's Beacon, which isn't too far from Chester. Obviously, you'd be able to travel there. It's got a very good vantage point for viewing the sky there, and if you pick the right weather, you've cracked it.
Brilliant. Thank you for your question, Lee. If you want to get in touch, do it quick, because we are running out of time. It's probably the best thing to do is text in. Text the word TALK, then a question, and the number is 6... 10 25. You can call us on 708 1059, 0151 708 1059. Get through to Big Dave on the phones. And all that information is on the website. Very cool, interactive website. It's planetxlive.co.uk. Right, we're talking to Miles Johnson. And just before the break, he touched on the Super Soldier story. And I'm going to play a little clip from one of his documentaries from a while back. He interviewed a guy called, very fascinating guy, and implore you to watch the actual interview on YouTube. In fact, we'll try and get it on our website as well. It's with a super soldier who's now in his 70s, I think, called John Erwin, talking about a sort of mission that he went and carried out in the Middle East. Here's that a little bit, and we'll talk to Miles more about it after you've heard this.
Now, in Bases 13, we revisit John in his home in Newcastle, where he reveals for the first time that the British officer who recruited him into the 16 may not have been human. The 16 were also after ancient, possibly alien crystal energy weapons technology, some of which they recovered in Jaraba, described in part two. With his dear wife ill in hospital, we give you John Erwin and One Step Beyond the 16.
My name is John Erwin. I will be 74 in a few months' time. And this all started 53 years ago when I was called up for my national service.
So your function, the group's function, is to fight the Illuminati.
Yeah, exactly.
Now that's no mean feat, 1957.
Yeah, and this was all took place in the Middle East.
So this was a secret group organised in the British Army to fight the Illuminati.
That's right. Again, we had to get from one building across the two barbed wire fences, and this is where the skills come in. These are the skills that our special forces haven't got. And I'm not describing exactly how we did it, but some of the descriptions is in the book, you know, and how we did it. Anyway, we got into the building. We caused a distraction on the outside of the building to make sure that the two guards that were guarding this guy dashed down into the courtyard because we had set fire to a generator. There was only one big door in the room. There was no way out of that room. And what we did was we saw the keys on his desk. We locked the door, put the bolts in, put the chair underneath the door, put the keys in his pocket, but we weren't in the room when we did it. Nothing magic. We're outside in the corridor when we did this. That is explained in the book how that's done. And this SES officer, who really thought that was a real fairy tale, when he came at my club, I did it in my office and showed him how it was done. And he was, you know, completely gobsmacked. He was shocked.
Fascinating stuff. Miles on the line joining us in London. Miles, tell us more about that particular documentary that you made with John Erwin and the guy himself. He does sound like a fascinating guy.
The first thing that John does is he looks at things in what's called the first degree. In other words, he doesn't get fazed by all the distractions, all the things that keep putting you off the scent, and that's really the one thing you've got to take away from this. You've got to look at things in plain sight, things which are as they are and not how others want to make you think they are by one form of distraction or other. The thing about that interview, it was the second time we interviewed him, and this was when he actually then admitted or accepted that A, he was out of body when he was being with this officer. Now, because people haven't read the book or understand, this is a guy on National Service, 1957. He was recruited into this special unit by a rather strange-looking British officer. Now, he then subsequently described in the interview that this officer had very large blue eyes, very white skin that he had to put fake tan on, and very, very white hair. He had to dye, you know, black. He also described how this being behaved in a sort of mechanical kind of way, almost sort of like a robot, was able to do lots of special things, and it was this being which told him all about many things about the Illuminati and about all sorts of things like that. So for a young recruit, 1957, this was, hey, you know, this guy had never seen TV. A lot of people hadn't seen TV, 57, hadn't seen any science fiction films, etc. So it was only when I re-interviewed him in February that he was able to tell us that, yes, in this special elite force in the British Army in the 1950s, you were having ETs I know I've just said that ETs are really extra-dimensionals, but it's an indication that for many, many years, the British military has been involving non-human or non-terrestrial beings as part of their intelligence and their weapons systems, because we have got a very seriously compromised situation amongst us. And at the moment, everybody's just playing a little game where if one side is moved or pushed on the other side, things change slightly. So we've got to understand that the British military is dealing with non-terrestrial beings. Urban was trained to deal with that in a particular way, which we won't go into now. And on his final mission, he saw two massive flying saucers take off from the Syrian desert. They recovered two special crystal devices, which were part of a set of six, which realigned all the relevant dimensional gateways and interdimensional gateways across the Earth. In other words, the physical gateways on Earth would have to be realigned slightly so they would accurately match with the interdimensional portal or gateway, which were all put there by the ancients many, many thousands of years ago. So the British military have been dealing with this for a very long time, and make no mistake about it, with the rope viewing and all these kinds of things that they are engaging with non-terrestrial, non-human beings. And so the whole disclosure thing is basically up there. Irwin has given it to you.
Miles, I've got to say, it does sound like something straight out of Indiana Jones, but this is all quite well documented, isn't it?
Yeah, the thing about it is Indiana Jones is, again, they're laughing at you. They're explaining everything to you, but they're not telling you it's real. And it's up to the individual to wake up and realize that we live in a very complex, fascinating world. And the more ordinary people just wake up, get aware, get educated about it, then these hoodlums, which are fleecing us blind, will not quite get away with what they're getting away with. I mean, we don't need chemical rockets. We don't need chemical power stations. We need zero-point systems with the technology which Nikola Tesla gave us 100 years ago, that which is all there. But this small group of industrialists who are robbing us blind and giving us a merry dance, and the other non-dimensional or higher-dimensional beings are trying to tell us that.
The sad thing is, though, I mean, we have, people talk about zero-point energy, and there's been all these sort of inventions to run cars on water and hydrogen over the years. It's been known. And you mentioned there the technology that Nikola Tesla had back in the 30s and 40s. But because of the way the world that we live in is so industrialized, and the big companies like the oil companies dominate everything, it seems, will we ever see these technologies come into light without them being patented by the big oil companies?
Well, the patents are being stolen, sucked into locked holes and taken away from us constantly. People just have to go back into the original Maxwell's equations. They were all hijacked. So bright, if you've got any bright kids out there, you want to go right back into basics and get those fundamental equations, Maxwell's equations. The basic equations of physics were completely hijacked by the industrialists at the end of the 1800s. There are strong indications now that was a real thing that happened with Titanic, where they basically stuck a whole lot of opposing rich industrialists who didn't sign the deal, so to speak, and stick them in one big fat boat and sink a lot of them. And one individual got off that boat to make sure that it all happened. But that's a different ballgame. I don't want to go into too much detail. Just go back to the original physics, the original Maxwell's equations, and they're all associated, very high-level mathematics associated with all that, and dig out the stuff that has all been suppressed from the textbooks in the last 100 years. And that's what you got to look for. And that's what the Germans were doing. They were investigating what was called non-Einsteinian physics. Which, again, Einstein's a big distraction. That's why it's called the special theory of relativity. Okay? So the sharp guys, the students, the young people, go and find those equations, independently re-research that stuff, and you will have anti-gravity, zero-point energy, healing devices, time-reversed wave technology, which will heal people without all these drugs. It's all there in the physics. Go out there, find it, do it, and demand that those patents are released and the people who've been suppressing them taken and held to book.
Miles, we've got less than a minute. I think Steve just got a quick question for you.
Yeah, just a quick question, Miles. I'm just wondering if you what your view is in regards to hyperdimensional physics. I don't know if you've been following that over the last sort of 5 years.
Yes, it's all there. It's all there. It's all explained in those in those equations, the portal technology, the whole thing. And again, the use of names and associated things are often misleading here. But it's all there. It's a wonderful century ahead of us. Research it, apply it, do it.
Fantastic stuff. Very quickly, you are going to be in Liverpool the end of June. You're going to be appearing as part of the ET conference. Briefly, Miles, what sort of stuff can we expect if people want to come along to see the show?
Yeah, I'm going to introduce people to the BASIS series, which is a long-form research series. We're up to BASIS 16. The CF4 is still in the can. And the MASH project, where we're getting ordinary people across the country to stand up very bravely and describe their experiences so that it's a perfectly normal thing. There's a whole lot going on. We're going to expose it rather than wait for disclosure.
And we touched on very briefly at the start of the interview about a lady that you interviewed in Prague. Is it Eva Zemanova?
Yeah, Eva Zemanova.
Fascinating encounter that she's had.
No, it's not an encounter. It's a direct memory of what she is. She is an ancient.
But
there are two others that I know who have had exactly the same experience, which are not on camera.
What I want to know is, because the only one that's on there at the moment, the sound is terrible, and that's nothing to do with you. It's not your interview. When is your interview going to be on?
Well, there's 20 hours of stuff on the computer. BASIS 16. It's going to be about a month, because I've got 15 and a couple of others to sort out.
Okay, so let us know as soon as it's on.
And of course, the last one was a fascinating John Lear interview, who is a very wily fox. In those 3 hours.
Miles, fantastic. I definitely think we've got to get you back on the show because we've not even scratched the surface. But thanks for talking to us.
Okay.
Cheers, Miles. Miles Johnson there. And that's about it. We are totally out of time. Thank you to the guys as well. Thank you to Dan the Man. Thank you to Steve Mayer.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
And thanks to the other boys as well, Dave Stretch and also Big Dave as well. Okay, let's take a look ahead to next week's show, and we've got some more cracking guests lined up for you. Next week, we're going to be talking to Roz Coleman, who is a psychic artist. She claims to be able to channel spirit guides and relatives who have passed over and then draw remarkable pictures of those spirits. We'll be putting her to the test live on the show. We'll also be talking and having a fascinating debate with the author and researcher Andy Lloyd, who's on the line right now. Andy, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks, Neil. Nice to be with you.
Now, next week, we're going to be talking about the real Planet X, or as some people call it, is it Nibiru?
Yes, that's right, Nibiru. Planet X is sort of a holy grail for astronomers and for people like myself who've been interested in sort of mythology and stuff, that there's this extra planet in the solar system, and I want to discuss that at length and tell you all about it and where it might be and how far away it might be and what the implications are if we can find it.
Right, let's explore it a little bit more. Now, this is a dark star. For anybody who doesn't know what a dark star is, this is something that can't be seen with various telescopes.
It's a planet that was described in ancient mythology, and it's a lot of people got different ideas as to how this planet might turn out. It could just be a sort of world like Earth, a very, very long distance away beyond Pluto. Or it could be, as you say, one of these dark stars, which is something that astronomers are very excited about these days, these tiny little brown dwarf objects, which are not quite stars, not quite planets. And these things seem to be popping up all over the place at the moment. And it's my opinion that we've got one orbiting around the Sun, and that is our Planet X object.
Okay. Now, some of the things that I've read about it, this is something that this is either a planet or a star that comes back into our solar system and then goes back out into the far reaches of the universe. Is that true?
You're absolutely right, Neil. most of the planets in the solar system go around in reasonably circular orbits. Their orbits aren't particularly elliptical, but they are a little bit, but not crazy elongated. And this particular object is likely to have a much more eccentric orbit, which takes it sometimes quite close to the other planets, possibly inside the line of some of the planets. But for the most time, it's way, way out there, out amongst the comets.
Okay. Now, for a lot of people who aren't into this sort of stuff, into the planets and the astrology side of things and all that, it is quite an important sort of planet, isn't it? Because you believe that the dark star, or whatever it is, seems to play an important part in our own history.
Mm-hmm. That's right. It's if this object is a dark star, then it has the potential to have its own system of planets around it that would be warmed by it, in the same way that the Jupiter's moons are warmed by Jupiter. And a lot of people now think that there are oceans in the moons of Jupiter that can contain life. Well, this dark star would be warmer than Jupiter, and the moons, if you like, that orbit it could be warmer still than the ones around Jupiter. So I think there's a great possibility of finding life there. The myths that I've already talked about this Planet X object, they indicate, and it depends on how you interpret them, but they indicate that we were visited in the distant past, in our historical period, by aliens, effectively, and that, you know, one of the potential places they might have come from would be this planet within our own solar system.
It makes sense because science says that the closer you are to the sun, the warmer it gets. But mm-hmm. what you're saying is, because this could be a dark star, it would provide some sort of heat the further out you go.
That's right. And, you know, it does that in a number of ways. One of them is it's itself, although it's quite a dark object, it's not a full star, it gives off some heat itself. But also it has the ability through its sort of major gravity effects and other effects to warm the planets around it. So I think there's a very, very strong possibility of effectively finding an Earth-like planet out there amongst our comets that are being warmed up by one of these dark stars. And that, you know, that could absolutely overturn our understanding of our own solar system. Because for years, we've believed, you know, Earth's this little jewel, Goldilocks zone, it's just the right temperature for liquid water. Everywhere else is pretty much barren and a complete waste of time. And we're just starting to open up to the possibility that, you know, actually life could exist in other places. Now, this would be an absolute golden opportunity for life to exist elsewhere in the solar system.
Now, the big question is, why don't we know this? I mean, why is this sort of being suppressed? Why aren't NASA jumping from the rooftops screaming and shouting about this?
It's a needle in a haystack. Absolutely, literally, a needle in a haystack. Finding this object would be extremely difficult. The clue's in the name. The dark star is extremely difficult to spot visually. You'd only be able to find it in infrared. And infrared sky searches aren't particularly easy things to do and haven't been done since about the 1980s. With the moment, there is an infrared sky survey going on called WISE. It's the best chance we've got of finding this object. And they will be reporting really next year. So there's a good possibility, if this thing exists, that next year will be the time we find out about it.
Okay, interesting stuff. Andy, thanks for joining us on the show tonight.
You're welcome.
And we will look forward to going a lot more in-depth into Planet X. And I love some of the names as well, the Destroyer. It's great, isn't it? Or Nemesis. These are some of the names that it was known by.
A lot of people have identified this object in other mythologies, and particularly in the Bible and other things like something called the Colbrin, as this object that comes into the solar system periodically and is this sort of bright, red, dark, monstrous object that appears in the sky and causes catastrophe on this planet. And therefore, the nicknames that are given to it, the varied names that are given to it, are mostly associated with cataclysm. A lot of people think this year was the year it was going to return, but it's not looking like it's going to at this stage.
Which is good, because I'm getting married at the end of the year. We don't want any of that.
Absolutely. We've got enough trouble in the world at the moment without a great big red planet appearing in the sky.
I know. Now, the other thing I was going to mention that you've just mentioned there, which throws up a whole other question, if we're struggling to spot this dark star with all our technology, how come that it was all in you know, these mythical writings and folklore thousands of years ago?
Well, if these people, I suppose is probably the best way of putting it, did visit our Earth, they effectively set up shop here, set up a colony on our planet, and our whole civilization, this is the speculation, our whole civilization was sort of given to us by these gods, effectively. They were gods, came down from the sky. They told us how to live, told us how to get our act together, and shaped us into the sort of civilized social creatures that we are. And our mythology, our belief in these gods, stems from real interactions with real people. And at some point, they decided to leave again. All we're left with now is the myths and the civilization that they gave to us.
It sounds fascinating. I really look forward to having you back on the show to talk more in depth. For now, though, Andy, thanks for coming on.
You're welcome. See you now.
X marks the spot. This is Planet X on City Talk 105.9.
Right, also on the show next week, we're going to be talking to Magnus Milliner, who is a nutritionalist and life coach. And he's on the line as well. Magnus, welcome to Planet X.
Well, thank you very much. Good evening to you. Thank you for inviting me.
Now, tell the listeners a little bit about what we're going to be chatting to you about next week. It's going to be good stuff, I think.
Well, what I'd like to do is just to remind your listeners about what I believe would be the last four doctors that they'll ever need. And what I'll do is maybe go into a little bit more detail about these doctors, starting with one of the greatest physicians called Dr. Quiet, and you know, related to sleep, self-time, introspection, you know, spiritual development, that kind of inside yourself work. And then, without spending too much detail on the quiet side, although silence can be golden, we will move on to the next key physician which exists with us, and that's Dr. Diet. And of course, that's my passion, so I'd be very keen to, and obviously if any listeners have any questions, it'd be great to send questions in about diet.
Absolutely. And I mean, is that just related to losing weight, that sort of diet, or what you're putting into your body?
Well, that would be a so-called side effect, losing weight. I mean, really, it's about just feeling good and finding the foods that are right for you. And I could go into more detail about removing certain products that will definitely compromise our immune systems. But really, it's just finding the foods that are right for you and finding the right proportions as well of fats, carbohydrates and proteins, which are known as macronutrients. But ultimately, they carry the other thing, which is important, called micro, which means small micronutrients, which obviously keeps us healthy. So, you know, Dr. Quiet, Dr. Diet, and then moving on to another beautiful doctor called Dr. Happiness, which is another wonderful physician, which, again, we know happiness doesn't exist out there. It's within self. It's within us. So that will be the third doctor. And then finally, I'll be talking about Dr. Movement, because obviously movement is life. So those are the four doctors that I'll be going into more detail
Brilliant.
This week.
I'm really looking forward to it. As you say, if any of the listeners have got any questions, give us some sort of topics that we could throw at you for next week.
Well, I mean, if anyone has any kind of, I suppose, challenges related to their well-being, whether it's to do with mindset or whether, you know, how they're thinking, or anything to do with they're not sure about what kind of diet to follow, anything like that will be useful. But really the invite would be to people to find that balance in their lives. So that's kind of where I'm coming from, is that if anyone has any of these, I call them challenges, you'll understand this, none of us have any problems or issues in our life because we're not victims, but we certainly have challenges. You know, we've got to move from A to B, or we've got to get, you know, C and D done. And then with a challenge, that means there's an opportunity for us to grow and to develop. So that's what I see it. So if anyone's got any challenges in their life,
I'm sure we're going to get inundated.
Well, to do around the kind of lifestyle to do with nutrition and things like that, then please do email in. And it's not like, you know, I'm the pedagogical figurehead and I have all the answers, because as we know, really, that the power comes from the question.
Absolutely.
So really the individual themselves, that they have all the answers, that perhaps might be a bit misled and misfed by, you know, the media and what have you. So I'd like to remind them that, you know, the power's within.
Brilliant. Magnus, look forward to it. We will talk more next week on the show just after 8 o'clock. Thanks for coming on for now.
Fantastic. Thank you very much indeed. Thanks, Neil.
This is Planet X on City Talk 105.9.
And that will just about do it for another week. Thanks for listening. Don't forget, if you'd like to get involved with the show in any way, please do. It's dead easy to do. All the details are on the website, all the W's, planetxlive.co.uk. You can get the email address there. You can also get the links to Twitter and Facebook. Great Facebook group. Lots of new members joining all the time, so do get involved. and let us know what you think of the show, and if you've got any opinions about anything that we're doing or saying on the show, or indeed if you've got any suggestions for future guests, we'd love to hear from you. Everything you need to know is on planetxlive.co.uk. Right, stand by. Pete Price is on the way. Have yourselves a great night, and of course we'll do it again next week when the truth is on air from 8 till 10 with another Planet X. Good night.
Planet X. Planet X. Produced by Sugar Buddha Media for City Talk 105.9. All rights reserved. Planet X. The truth is on air. City Talk 105.9.